right, the J.B. DeRaw show number 221 here. Was this the last show for September? Heading into October,
yeah, definitely.
Fall. I said last week.
October next week already.
Yep. Tim, last show, I had a title at the bottom and I said fall is coming. We never talked about fall. We'll talk about it tonight. But fall is coming eventually. And, you know, October for me kind of feels like fall. My wife and I are heading up into the North Georgia Mountains sometime in early October. I don't know if the leaves will be changing quite yet.
Not then for you.
But we'll talk about this in a second. I want to spend a little bit of time while I'm up there scouting out a few locations. Yep. All right, so let's get started. I got something to do in the second half of this that was a question in our Facebook group, but we're going to wait and do that in the second half. So first off, let's talk about a couple of news stories. Which one first? Oh, I want to talk about this thing over at Petapixel, which is three questions to ask yourself before switching cameras. So, you know, lately, we've been talking about the new Nikon mirrorless, the new Canon mirrorless. I think Luminex has one, and Fujifilm. Yeah, everybody's coming out with the new mirrorless cameras, right, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
So lots of people are thinking of a switching, or either within the brand and going from a mirrored camera to a mirrorless, or even switching brands.
Right.
And, you know, I've picked up lenses, my 7200. I picked up from a friend who back in the day when we were both shooting sports, soccer, that he was switching from Nikon to Canon because Canon had, at the time, a little bit better noise handling. It handled the noise a little better. And he sold, I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment because he has a lot. So I picked up a Nikon D2H from him, which at the time was their top-of-the-line sports camera, 4 megapixels, a flash, and the 7200, all in excellent condition. I picked those up from him. He switched to Canon, and then you know, the next time Nikon came out with something, they leapfrogged Canon and had better noise control. Mm-hmm. And guess what? He sold all that and came back to Canon. I mean, Nikon. Like, so this had
three... maybe he must have just had money burning his pocket.
him and his wife worked and they had no kids. So I think
there you go.
I think that they had some, and they had both, I think, decent jobs. I don't know what their financial situations were, but apparently he was in enough shape that he could do that. So this article has three questions, and I actually want to do them in a different order than what he had them in.
Okay.
So he had the order as, what's the out-of-pocket expense? What's the increase in quality? And then number three, which is the one I want to do first, what is your problem? So, we're not talking about what is your psychological problem. It's what problem are you trying to solve by getting a different camera?
And, you know, I think that that's a very good question. And I think that's the reason I have not purchased a new camera.
Right.
Because I'm pretty pleased with my camera and I get the pictures I want. And probably the only thing that I could say that I would really want to change is the weight issue. Carrying all the equipment is heavy. And I think going with a mirrorless would be lighter. Is it that much lighter? I don't know that it's going to be that much to the point where I'm going to say, oh, thank God I don't have to carry this huge bag with 26 pounds of equipment. Now it's going to be 18. You know, 18, 26, I don't know if that's that much of a difference to me. So I think that would probably be my only problem that I see at this current time for myself. And I think you're talking the other two questions, and definitely cost is not overcoming my problem. I think that's probably the issue for me.
If I look at my last two changes and the one I'm considering coming up, my last two was I moved from this Nikon D2X that I have right back here, which was a 12 megapixel, was it 12? Yeah. Maybe that wasn't the one I switched from. I can't remember. I moved from that one to a Nikon D700, which was, I think, also 12 megapixels. The D700 had better noise handling, had better frames per second than the D2X, mm-hmm. and especially with the grip added. And I was still shooting a lot of sports, and I wanted the better frames per second, and I also wanted the better noise. I love that camera. That camera was a great camera. Actually, I think I still have it. Great camera, and I used it for a lot of sports. But one of the things, it didn't have quite enough frames per second, and I wanted to go back to a crop body. Because for sports, for that crop body, I get a little bit more zoom. Where I really noticed it was when I was shooting from the side of swimming with the crop body, I was able to go 3-4 lanes in and still fill the frame with the, you know, the swimmer. And whenever I was shooting with a D700, I couldn't go as far with and fill the frame. And I still had the same megapixels, so I couldn't really crop as much. So I, in that case, the thing that was holding me back or the thing I wanted to change was to go back to a crop body. The next change I'm thinking about doing is I want something with a little more megapixels and a full frame, probably in addition to, you know, my D500. I want to have something where I can use for landscape.
You know, right, and that makes sense.
Yeah. So the question with the for the D500, it can do, I think with the grip on it, it can do the same frames per second as the D500 or close to it, almost the same. And it can do DX mode. I'm not a big fan of DX mode in a full frame. So my thought right now is if I did it, I would keep that one too. So for me, that's the two things that are one making me buy new cameras and consider to buy a new camera. One of them is not weight. Although I'm holding this right now and with the grip on it, this D500, it is pretty heavy and I only have an 85mm lens on it.
Right.
But if I'm shooting sports, then I got a big lens on this thing and I'm thinking about the weight of the lens and not the weight of the camera. And I'm probably got it on a monopod.
Exactly. And even if you went to one of the new mirrorless cameras and you're going to have on a large telephoto lens, that's once again going to be the weight. Now, granted, I think those lenses weigh, I don't want to say significantly less, marked less than a comparable SLR lens, but that is still where the heft is going to be. So you're not gaining that much, I think, overall. But, you know, you talked about what made you replace, and it made me think of my old camera. I had, before the A77, I had a Sony A700. And the things that I liked when they came out with the new camera, it had video in it. It went from 12 to 24 megapixels. It had GPS sensor built into it, which I liked. When I took the pictures, it told me where I was because I used to carry that little dongle along. Now I think with a phone, it would be a little bit easier to align where I was. Mm-hmm. And there was something. Well, it's also single lens translucent. So I like the digital viewfinder. But I think the biggest one for me at the time was the video camera. I used to walk around with one of the Sony digital video cameras with my SLR, or I didn't have it, and then I couldn't take video. So that to me was the biggest thing. But the new ones, I'm like Gary said, I'm not a professional. I'm just a photo taker. I take pictures of my kids in sports. I take pictures on vacations. Do I need to spend several thousand dollars to get a new camera? No, I don't. I just went to a college fair with my son last night. So, yeah, I got two. I know now I could not.
I got two in college. And as we're about to talk about that next, but that's the question that, you know, for me, it's a hobby too. I'm not making money from this. If I see James Oliver out there and on Facebook, and I think he's a professional photographer. So if you are, that's a cost of doing business. You got to get, but even then, you got to get the equipment that you need to do the job. So, you know, is equipment you have now not doing it, or is it about to die because you've used it a ton? So that's a different decision from that side.
If you have 200,000 shutter releases and your camera's going to die,
right,
and it can die at your next event, you need to buy something.
Right. And you probably already have more than one, but you may need to replace one of those two. For me, though, it comes down to, what is my current one not doing that I need to do, or how is it holding me back? Often what's holding me back is me, not the camera. But there are some specifics in sports where I wanted something faster. And that's, again, what I want. So it leads us into the next two questions, which are kind of the same, is what is it going to cost you? You know, if you're going to sell your old equipment, you might be able to get something from that. I think when I went to sell one of my cameras to get this 500, the D500, what I was going to get for the camera was like $100 or something like that. And I said, forget that. Maybe it was a D2X. I wasn't going to get that much for it. And I just forget
it.
I'll keep it and convert it to infrared. So, I knew at that point what it was going to cost me is the total cost of the camera. Now if you're staying within Nikon, like in my case, if I'm buying a D850, it's really just the cost of the camera, because all my other gear will work with it. But if you're switching systems, even going from, you know, a Nikon to the new mirrorless, or I'm going from Nikon to Sony or something like that, you have more than just the camera body.
Right. Now you got to buy lenses, flashes, all those little things that you already probably have, mm-hmm. you have to rebuild.
Yeah. So then it leads us to his third thing here, which I think one and two kind of go together, is given that once you total up the cost, and you may be able to spread some of it out, but once you total up the cost, is what that's going to give you worth that much money? And that's something really only you can answer. I mean, if you just won the lottery, then yeah, it's probably an easy answer. If you're struggling or about to send kids to college, or like in my case, have kids in college, you know, you may have different priorities. So mm-hmm. only you can answer that other question on where you're at financially and whether the addition, what you get from the new body, new system is worth it.
Absolutely. I agree.
All right. So it's just something to think about whenever you are, you know, with all this new camera news, and new camera news will always be out there. There's
yeah.
a lot going on right now. It'll settle down and then we'll have a lot more, you know, coming up in the future. If you want to read that article, it's over on Petapixel. It's called Three Questions to Ask Before you Switching Camera Brands. All right. So, Tim, what did I have next? Oh, let's do this. You don't know what I'm talking about. But, you know,
I can imagine which one. And this was a very intriguing article.
Is it this one? Lumapod?
Oh, no. That was actually, I like this one a lot. I'm actually considering it.
So I like to bring up different products that I find. And, you know, I bought the universal lens cap. You saw my thoughts on that. Mm-hmm. I have looked at a few other things that I was thinking about buying. I see these and man, their ads are slick and they get me to at least to the point where I'm interested in look it up. Where they lose me is when I have to actually spend money, because that's when I'm going to apply a different set of filters.
set of filters.
There you go. So in this case, this is what's called a Lumapod, and it is a they call it a world's fastest tripod. And I'm not even going to try and play the video just in case. But basically, there's two of them, the GO85, the GO120. The GO85 is a smaller one. It can hold up to 2.2 pounds, meant for, you know, phones or smaller cameras. They claim that the other one can hold a DSLR or a mirrorless camera with, I'm sure, a smaller lens. Not, you can't put a big lens on this thing. It'll hold up to 4.4 pounds, the bigger one, and it's folds up pretty small. It had something down here. Here's a little video of it. I think this is a smaller one where it folds up to like a little bitty, rod or something, a little bitty mm-hmm. stick. And then you unfold it and it's using tension rods. What do they call them? What is that? Carbon
Kevlar.
Fiber?
Kevlar.
No, Kevlar. Kevlar. Tension cables or whatever from the foot up to the head to give it some stability. What I don't know from this is whether and there's a picture of how small it folds up into.
15 inches, I think, or 15.4. That's what I actually looked up to see what was the size of it.
Yeah, it gets pretty small. I don't know if the feet are adjustable, like if you're not placing it on a level surface.
No, the one that it comes with, because it talked about it in there, it has leveling, I think it was a little bit below this or somewhere I saw it. They have leveling, actually go down about three or four, a little bit next to one size. Nope, keep going. One more, I think. Nope. Right past that.
There they are. There's the two of them side by side. They're pretty small. Is it here?
And there it is. You see the end of it? The one on the right has got those are leveling things it talked about. So now I think it even talked about it. It's going to have the ability to have wheels.
Yeah.
If you go down right, just go beneath and it's right there and it shows you leveling wheels and...
Yeah, so the wheels allow you to kind of roll it.
Right. I guess if you're videotaping, it's...
Right. And so what is the price of this, Tim? Where's the price?
I think about $150, I guess. It's somewhere between $100, $150, I guess, if you're pledging for it. For the $120 with the ball mount.
Let's go back up to the top. Where they have the price?
Now you got to go to Pledge.
Pledge?
Yeah, I think on the top it was Pledge.
Is it Bactis product?
Yeah, Bactis product. Oh. And then it shows you all the options. But now you got to look for the Go 120 because the other one is more for a phone. So it's probably about halfway down the screen when you scroll down. Yeah, they have a lot of options.
So I don't know the, what is that, Euro to?
It has the price right underneath it, right above, in between the model number.
$100. There you go. Yeah. But $100 for the Go 120.
And that's just the mount. They sell it also with the camera kit, which would include like the compact ball head as well as an easy plate.
Yeah, so that's not that much more, 104.
So it's not a cheap one, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, when I bought a mini tripod to go on the cruise with me. They're not that stable. I mean, they rock at the littlest of motion. So you're battling something super compact with, providing some stability. I don't know if it was worth it that much to even bring it. So I'm going back up there again next summer to Alaska. I'm debating whether to even bring that little guy, that little travel tripod. AD out in chat says, so I actually have a mini tripod that uses the same shaft joints that these have, and they just do not last. They are friction turn style. So that's the thing. I don't know if this... I'm not going to be an early adopter. You know, I don't mind buying a $25 universal lens cap to be the guinea pig and give my feedback, but I'm not going to be buying $100 items just to review.
Well, you look at so you think about it. If it's $100 and it's where was that one? So it's $116 at 42% off. So really, it's like about $170, $180 is what they're looking for this.
I think I'm probably just going to bring my regular smaller tripod when I go back up there, rather than bringing the little mini travel tripod. I just don't. I didn't like it that much. Let me change that. It did okay with the phone, the little travel one. When I put the phone on there, and I put that gimbal I've showed it before, the DJI Osmo 2, put that on top of that. Then it worked okay. So I had a gimbal on top of that with my phone, the travel tripod. I was fine with that. But, you know, I didn't bring it for my phone. I brought it for the camera.
Right.
So if I was going to do it again, if I brought the little bit bigger, the bigger tripod, it would work for the phone too. I got a year to worry about it. All right, so I like to bring little crazy stuff like that every now and then.
No, I do like this, and I was intrigued by it. I really was.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I want to spend – I have several tripods already.
Yeah, so if you do want to buy it there, Tim, you can do a review later. Let us know how you like it. And then you could do a follow-up. Let us know, you know, if it's still lasting.
Yes, does it hold together?
Does it hold together? All right, so last week we talked about – we didn't talk about it. I had the title Fall Foliage, or Fall is Coming.
Fall Foliage. Yes, Fall is Coming.
Fall is Coming. And we never talked about it. I think in the pre-show or post-show, we talked about it and said we'd talk about it this week. So coming up soon, and I'll show a map here in just a second, to different parts of the country, depending on where you are, it may have already started, but fall is definitely coming. So I thought we'd go over a few tips from this website, Photography Life. The article is by NASIM, NASIM. You can go look it up. Photography Life, Fall Foliage Photography Tips is the thing here. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on all these. You just go over them here, and you can add your comments and ADs out there so you can tell me where I'm wrong or what I forgot. But I mentioned, you know, my wife and I going up to North Georgia soon to some time alone. And I wanted, while I'm up there, to do a little bit of scouting and see if I can find something, because I suck at scouting. I think
so do I.
I think
so
scouting I. takes.
I don't think about it at the time. That's the problem.
I see pretty colors and I just want to go out. But, you know, the scouting is important to know where to go. And I'm not good at looking at my phone and saying this will be a good spot to go. Yeah, I know AD has different websites where he can say, hey, I need to go here and that'll be good. I got to actually see it to do it. And really, I struggle with if I'm not seeing it at the right time of day, I may not be as good with it. So right. I like to see it. If I'm thinking about shooting morning shots, I want to see it in the morning and that kind of stuff. So I need to do more scouting. You know, I've been living in Georgia forever, and I just have not done enough scouting. So that's the first tip here is to go out and do research locations and do some scouting before time. Because once the colors start to change, you only have a few weeks before they'll go away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Next tip
I do like that picture you just went right by with the gates. I don't know why it was set up like that, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that is cool. He's got this. He has some good shots here. We'll come back to a map here in a second. And he says, shoot at sunrise for best colors. Now, sunrise means getting up really early.
Yes.
That's why I think a lot of people like to shoot with the evening light. But there are some advantages to morning light. One, especially in the fall, it might have gotten cooler at night. And therefore, there may be some fog in the morning. Mm-hmm. There may be some, if you're shooting like in a lake where he's shooting here, a little bit of steam or fog coming off the lake.
And it's not ripply. Once the afternoon comes, the water's ripply. You will not get that reflection either.
Some of the haze in the sky may have gone away because, the night coolerness, some of that haze goes away. So, shooting in the morning gives you some different looks, some different things you wouldn't see if you did it at night. Or in the evening with the sunset. And then his next tip, of course, is stay after sunset.
Stay after sunset. Long days.
Yeah. So you're going to be shooting in the morning for the sunrise, which means you need to get there before sunrise. And then you're going to stay till after, to sunset, and then after. And AD says, actually, autumn is the one time of year that shooting in the afternoon is actually good, as the top-down light really makes the trees catch light. Yep. And so great tip, AD. And the next, what he's saying here, stay after sunset. There's something that they're calling, you probably heard of golden hour, blue hour, all those things. Here's another term we've never mentioned on this show, but is not something necessarily new, is second sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in this shot here, so the sun is already set on the other side of these mountains. But what is happening now, it happens 5-15 minutes or so after sunset, where all of a sudden you get this explosion of color into the sky.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So you stay after sunset and you start to get this explosion of light. And then after that, you head into blue hour.
Right.
So long day. Of course, you can do something in the middle of the day, whatever you want to do.
Sleep, because you're getting up early and staying up late.
That's right. Maybe sleep, get something to eat, whatever. Unless you hike there, then you're going to be camping out all the time. Next tip is use a polarizer.
Polarizing filter.
Yeah, use a polarizer. So often you think about polarizer with just water, but polarizers can, there's a lot of reflections, especially in foliage.
Especially the clouds.
Yeah.
I think the clouds is the big one.
Yeah, AD says always, and he's saying that in caps, always stay about 30 to 45 minutes after the sun actually goes down. Yeah, the 5 to 15 minutes I mentioned is not a hard rule. You never know. Up until it totally starts to get dark, you don't know when that explosion of light's going to happen. So stay. You may get a scene that you weren't expecting when everybody else is packing up.
Or gone already, yeah.
Yeah, and he says consider HDR. So using a polarizer, it helps with some of those reflections, especially if it's rained. If you have any water or anything that's on the foliage, it also will help cut down a little bit of the haze and bring out some of the colors. And it's something that's not easily recreated in post.
Right, I think that's the one filter really that I don't know what you would do in post for reflections or anything. You got to do that while you're there.
Yeah. Yeah, the more you can do more you can do in camera, the better. And then this is something that if you listen to the photo review show with AD, he talks about this a lot, is, what is the subject? What are you shooting? Just because you have pretty fall colors. And this is one of the things I do, I'm bad at. I see the fall colors. I just want to take pictures of the fall colors. more color, the better. But you still got to have a subject. You know, you should be treating the scene as you would if it wasn't fall colors. The fall colors are, you know, a bonus to the scene and adding to the scene rather than creating the scene. Does that make sense?
This is a nice shot too.
Yeah, no, he has a lot of good shots. And here, you know, here's one of the road. He's talking about don't compromise your framing and composition because, yeah, all those rules still apply. I think this is similar to that one you liked, Tim. Yep.
Just think it's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, so, I think it's built that way so it doesn't fall over.
You can see here that had he come in the in this shot here, if he had come in the spring, this would have still been an interesting photo.
Right.
So the fall is just adding to the image. Yeah, the image would have stood on its own without the fall colors. All right. And then bad weather is good weather. I think this is the last one. Bad weather is good weather. You know, it may be difficult to get out in the rain and that kind of stuff. You can, you know, wear a raincoat and some kind of shoes. But, you know, the weather often will bring in light or rainbows in this case.
Rainbows in there, absolutely.
And oftentimes there's a lull in the rain where it's light just comes pouring through an opening in the clouds that creates a scene that wasn't there usually. So bad weather can
be good weather. Sun comes through like that, it might highlight a subject that wasn't expected. Like the one you got right
like
there.
Like this one here, yeah. Where all of a sudden you have a spotlight on the mountain there. After sunset, yep. Oh, and here you go. He did have some more, I forgot. Don't forget to look up. I love scenes like this where you know, you're looking straight up into the trees. I don't know if I've ever taken a good one like this. But yeah, look up. He doesn't say this here, but look down to, it's not always what's straight in front of you. Sometimes, you know, a leaf can be a good fall photo. And then he says, try shooting at night. I don't think that's a night shot. I think this is a night shot.
Well, no, you know what? That is. Look in the sky there. You see the stars up there.
That's true. Yeah.
I just saw them in the picture. So yeah,
very good. Yep.
So it must be a long exposure.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a nice one.
Yeah, it's a nice one. And then, you know, go for the details. Shots like this where, you know, you have a little bit of fall in the background, but it's all the details of that tree bark and all these trees being somewhat uniform out there creates a nice scene. There you go. And there's a little about Nassim Mansurov.
Mansurov.
So there's your fall foliage tips. If you have a tip about fall foliage, we'd love to hear about it. Send it to podcast@jpedraw.com and we'll maybe read it on air. Shot above the Milky Way is maroon bells in Colorado at 15,000 feet. It's AD. Wow. That's AD saying that. Yeah, so that was an awesome
shot. I'd have to bring some oxygen with me up there.
All right, so I mentioned we're going to talk about, I have a map. So here's a map. This is on smokymountains.com, their fall foliage map. So I said it's September 24th. I think they have what, one-week increments maybe here?
Yeah, because you can do the slider. October 1st is next. So the 24th is Monday. The 1st is a Monday. The 8th, yeah. So it's 1 week.
So depending on where you live, the green means really nothing's happened. The yellow means minimal. So you up there in New York, Tim, you have minimal. No, you've moved into, according to this, into partial.
Patchy,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then the orange there, the light orange is partial. The darker orange, which...
Near peak.
Yeah, I don't know if we have any near peak.
Then, no, nothing in this one yet.
Yeah, so let's slide it to October 1st, and you'll see how much it moved down. So October 1st, I'm up here, and I shoot usually in North Georgia for this kind of stuff. It started to move down into the minimal by October 8th. The North Georgia has now hit minimal. And really up there in your New York area, Tim, you're at near peak or actually peak.
Near peak.
Yeah.
Yeah, near peak. Near peak.
And of course, this isn't as precise as like you can count on this day, that being that, you know, this is a rough guide. October 15th,
I'm in peak.
You're in peak. North Georgia has now hit the Apache, and middle of October, or 22nd of October.
I'm done.
You're done. A lot of the north, a lot of those, you know, extreme north of the United States and the Rockies are really done. For me, down in the lower Smokies, we're now hitting what? Partial?
Yeah.
No. We're hitting, yeah, partial.
Yeah, partial.
And then toward the end of October.
You're right at that border. You can be partial near.
End of October,
depending
we're
depending on elevation.
Yeah, end of October, we're near peak to peak. And then in the first part of November, we're definitely at peak, near peak. Or, yeah. And so usually by the by what time? By October 29th, October 22nd, middle of October, really, Tim, you're done.
I'm done, yeah.
Yeah, so you really only have, what, three more weeks left? Two, three more weeks?
Tops. Yeah. Yeah. And then I'll have snow already.
So have you, and I think AD lives up there too, have you started to see the colors change then?
Nothing yet, no.
Really?
And with the amount of rain I had today, they probably knocked all the leaves off my tree, off the trees.
Yep. And AD says October 5th to 15th, he will be in Upper Peninsula of Michigan, peak week. Yep. Yeah, it'll be good. I love fall.
Yeah, so do I. Sadly, though, it seems like it goes from summer right into winter half the time now. Fall is such a short time frame.
Yep. I did have one more that we're not going to do for tonight. We're going to leave that to next time. The number one on the list there, Tim. So you have to wait till next time. You know how we did? I'm not even going to give a tip.
Nope.
Not even a hint. You have to stay next time to see that one because it is riveting.
Riveting, yes.
Riveting. You will.
Yes.
You will want to stay for that one. All right. So, Tim, we head out in the beginners group this week. Someone posed a question that I thought I might actually be able to help them.
You know? I thought I might be able to help them.
Well,
that
you
sounds
know,
fairly confident that might
often be. On the photo review show, it's, you know, it's mainly AD. He's the one, you know, providing all the great feedback to everybody. But this is a topic where I'm sure he can add more to the conversation too, but I can add some to this conversation. And the question is this, I need some advice. I have a Canon EOS Rebel 6S, and I'm not totally familiar with that camera, but a little bit. I'm trying to get clear photos of my granddaughter playing volleyball in a gym. If I use sports setting, they aren't truly clear. I've tried manual and autofocus. If I use auto setting, it causes the flash, which is not allowed.
Now, what I would do, and sadly, you gotta really bump up the ISO. I probably would go with manual focus versus
manual focus.
Autofocus. Yeah, because a lot of times you're gonna get the hunting and pecking from the camera, so it's gonna start bouncing around. So you try and focus where they are, and you gotta think they're gonna stay in a certain range, so you can. Sure. Stay there and try it that way. And obviously you're going to have to open it up as wide as you can. Problem is now you got those sodium lights in the gym. That is some of the hardest pictures to take.
And I have a 10-point thing here just because I wanted to create 10 points that we're going to go over here in just a second. But a little bit about her camera, the Canon EOS Rebel 6S. I think that's a little bit under $1,000, depending on whether you got the kit lens or not. The kit lens is a 18 to 135, 3.5 to like either 5.6 or 6.3. So it's a fairly slow lens. I don't know if she didn't mention what lenses she has, so I don't know if she has lenses in addition to that one, or if she even got the kit lens. So I don't know those things. 3.5 is going to be, depending on your gym, is going to be a challenge. You're going to have to really bump up the ISO. The camera only does 5 frames a second, which you can work around that. It does have anti-flicker mode. So, you know, the sodium lights you just talked about, Tim, where the lighting is pulsating. You don't normally notice it with your eyes. But if you ever take photos in a gym and include the scoreboard in that shot and you did like a burst, look at those photos. The in some of the shots, the scoreboard's gone. There's no score right. left. It's just gone. Because you don't see it with your eyes, but that scoreboard is pulsating.
Right.
And it's not an even pulsating. Sometimes you'll have half the scoreboard there, sometimes none of
right,
it.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
It's weird. And the sodium lights above you are doing the same thing. They're changing in amount and quality.
Right. If you take like a burst of six shots at the same exposure yeah. and everything, they're all going to be different.
Yeah, it's something. So her camera does have that flicker thing where it will try and compensate a little bit for that. But I think it's doing it by slowing down your shutter speed. So if it's going to try and look for that, I think, peak light. I've not used it that much, so I'm not familiar with it too much. Look for that peak light and try and take the photos there. So it's probably going to slow your frame rate down a little bit to try and compensate that. That may be something you don't want to do. Gary says, if she's new to photography, use a monopod. One of the hardest thing to learn is staying steady. Yeah, monopod. Generally in gyms, they won't let you use a tripod, but they probably will let
right,
you use
a monopod.
But a monopod
usually allowed, yeah.
And a lot of sports, even if you're
right,
soccer.
Because a tripod, they're afraid that people are going to trip right. over it. Monopod's directly in front of you.
Yeah,
I think
monopod,
that's the reason.
I've used it shooting basketball. You know, if I'm using a 70-200, you can handhold a 70-200 generally, depending on, you know, the photographer. But a monopod can be helpful too. The thing... So let's go over some of my tips here, Tim. You ready?
Okay.
So let's see if I can do this.
Uh-oh. Tip, is this PowerPoint or something?
Tip number one, get there early.
Yes.
And I got to get some other stuff set up here so we can do this kind of neat. Get there early. So that didn't work. Hold on. We got more coming. I got to make one more change. There
you go.
Get there early. So I like to get to the event maybe about 30 minutes before the event and while the previous people are shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, get there while the previous game is going on, if there was one. And that's the time whenever I am, you know, you got like, here's a player. She has her pre-warm-up clothes on, and I'm going to be doing some of my settings and getting everything set up. You know, taking some shots and, you know, getting comfortable, finding out my locations and everything. There you go. So let's go to the next one. Bring more than one lens.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I bring more than one lens? Because if I'm shooting in a gym, I'm probably going to bring my 70-200. It's a 2.8 lens, but some gyms are just awful. And even 2.8 is not enough. You know, you're pushing. I've been in gyms where I'm shooting down to 1/400th of a second. Depending on the players, 1/400th of a second may not be fast enough to stop the action.
Right.
And at that, so at 2.8, 1/400th of a second, ISO 12,800 wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that bad. So I often will bring my 85 along with me. I'm showing it here. An 85 millimeter, which is I have a 1.8. If you need something that is maybe a little more, I thought I had a photo of an 85. Yeah. There you go. If I'm more limited where I can shoot. If I'm shooting with an 85 or a 50, yeah, depending on if you have a crop body or full frame, I may not be able to have the same reach. But, hey, it's better to be able to stop the action and expose properly, especially at those high ISOs, than to not be able to get it at all.
Right.
So that's why I recommend bringing a second lens or you know, more than one. You know, if the 50 will do it, then do the 50. And if not, do an 85 or something like that. Something that's going to be faster than your 2.8.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number three is when I am in when I'm there at the game and I'm, you know, doing the pre-stuff, I'm going to be setting up my exposure, usually in manual mode. That's going to kind of depend on the gym too, because I've been in gyms where the lighting is horribly uneven. Okay.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, you're in this place where in one place I've had a case where during the game, some of the lights went off and they just kept playing. They just kept playing. So it was dramatically different
exposures.
They're
not thinking about you, Mike.
They don't care less. And and so what I'm doing is I'm setting my exposure. I'm probably doing either a spot or a center weighted off of the players. In this case, they had white jerseys. You probably, if you're playing with a white jersey, you're playing against a darker jersey. So mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to do that. But you also have things in the scene. Like I got this here where you can see this this sign is on the side. It's very bright. So if you did evaluated metering, that would throw off your metering. Or if you're not in manual mode and you're moving around, that's going to throw off your metering too.
Right.
And if I showed that earlier one where I'm shooting up, I think I have one like that here too. If you're shooting up at a player, you're also in the ceiling, you're catching some of those lights as you're shooting mm-hmm. up. And if you're doing, you know, auto exposure and you're doing the scene evaluating, you know, whatever it is, exposure, that stuff's going to throw it off. So when I set my exposure, I'm setting it on, I'm going to manual mode and I'm setting it against the player and doing that. Anything to add there, Tim?
No, you never thought of, because a lot of times what I wound up doing is going, let's say, aperture priority mode and setting the aperture to a certain thing to let the shutter take where it needs to be.
So what I'm going to do is, while I'm doing this, and I've done aperture priority, is I'm looking for the slowest shutter speed that I can get away with to stop the action.
Okay.
Because I know I'm going to have to bump my ISO up.
Okay.
And so in this case, with this case, I think these guys were high school players. They were fast. I probably had to go 1/640th, maybe as high as 1/800th or 1/1000th. Younger kids, I might have been able to get away with 1/500th of a second. Mm-hmm. But so I'm going to set that, and I want that as my speed.
Your lock, okay.
Then I'm going to set my aperture.
Because you know that's going to freeze. You know that's going to freeze the motion.
Then I'm going to probably set my aperture to wide open.
Okay.
Because I'm generally shooting one player. If I need to, I might go up a little bit that you get a little bit more depth of field. But in this case, I'm probably wanting to go wide open. And then I'm going to let my ISO be the thing that moves. In my camera, I can do auto ISO. I think in her camera, you might be able to do it in in manual mode. I don't think you can do it in some of the other modes, but you'd have to look at that. So I'm letting ISO move around. And that way, if I have my shutter set to the lowest I can let it go with that and still freeze the action. Mm-hmm. I'm letting locking in my aperture to the most wide open. Then I'm letting the ISO move around. So as I'm moving across the scene, because it's not evenly lit, I'm letting the ISO change a little bit. And I have topped that out where I'm telling it not to go above 12,800. So I still got to keep a little bit of an eye on it to make sure that I'm getting proper exposure. And so in that case, I am still using some kind of metering, and I'm probably going to stick with, you know, center weighted, something like that. So in the case like this shot, I won't blow out or expose for the ceiling and have the players be dark.
Yeah, I don't. In manual, I do not have auto ISO.
So, yeah, I don't know what all cameras have that. If you don't have that, then you may have to just, you know, play around with it and
I have it in shutter priority, aperture priority, but not in manual. Okay. I didn't think I did manual because I shoot a lot in manual.
Yeah, and maybe a newer Sony has it, or I don't know if all cameras have it. I use it a lot, auto ISO. If you don't have it, you know, then you're going to lock in your ISO and maybe let your aperture move around. To me, letting your shutter move around, you may get into shutter speeds where you're not stopping the action.
Right.
And in this case, I'm not talking much about a shutter speed where you can hold it. Because generally when you shoot in sports, the issue isn't whether you have fast
right.
enough.
For
you
to, it's
yeah, they're moving right. that you have to be careful of. All right. Number four is to set your white balance. And that's one of the things I'm doing in that 30 minutes I get there early is I am setting up my white balance. You know, I'm going to get a model to hold my gray card, and so I can set my white balance. You know, finding different models to hold my gray card, and get my white balance set. And if you're in a gym, you know, generally that is going to be, you know, the same white balance. As the lights pulsate, they will change it, but you're not having to worry about the sun coming in and changing the white balance that much. I mean, if you're outside, auto white balance actually does fairly good, or you can set, you know, the Kelvin somewhere or one of the other things. In a gym, different gyms have different colors, so you definitely want to set your white balance. Mm-hmm. So there, I set my white balance and take test shots and make sure everything's working before you get started. All right. Now, this is one where I'm going to differ from you, Tim, is set your camera to autofocus continuous. And I thought I had an example of that. Where? I don't know which image went with what. Now that I look at these.
And, you know, I agree with AD here in regards to the the white balance. If you're shooting in RAW, it means nothing.
So why I'm gonna say that I still set it, because yes, we're gonna get to a tip later on, but why I still set my white balance is because it's very off-putting when you look at the back of your camera and it's funky. The white balance is just way off. And so, you know, you're shooting and you're taking these shots and you're looking at the back of your camera. The image you're looking at on the back of your camera, as far as I know, all cameras are like this, is a JPEG image.
JPEG, yeah, I think so.
And so, you know, that image in the back of your camera is going to be orange or whatever crazy color those lights are, depending on what your white balance you have set to. If you have it to auto, it may try and do it. But I have found, for me personally, that I still like to set my white balance to try and get the back of the camera to look okay. Mm-hmm. And he says he never looks at the back of the camera. I do a lot.
Yes. So do I. Actually, I don't look at the back of the camera.
I know, because you
find it, because it shows
you
it to me.
Sony
right there.
Sony guys have it set there, but I look at the back of my camera.
Yeah, I just look at my viewfinder, and it's right there for me.
And I like to see that. So that's why I do that. Okay, for autofocus, the reason I like continuous autofocus is what I am doing when I am holding, I use back button focus. So if you don't know what that is, there's on Nikon at least, this is on. There's a little button, the AF on button. I'm sure Canon has it. Sony probably has it.
Sony has a version of it, right?
Most of the cameras have it. And I've got my finger just pressed on that thing most of the time. And I'm sitting there and I'm following a player or following the action and I'm waiting for something to develop. And so I'm constantly keeping that player or the action in focus. And then my finger's just sitting on the shutter waiting to start banging out some photos. Mm-hmm. So for me, I like that continuous autofocus. And sometimes that action is moving. So I maybe you guys are more skilled than me. I can't possibly keep up with that with manual focus.
See, what happens with me, and I use my son's soccer game, and he plays in the net a lot. And for me, if I'm focusing in on him, he's going to stay in a relatively same position a lot. And if it's on autofocus for me, somebody's going to cross in front of the camera lens and screw up that autofocus on me. So that's where a lot of times I'll keep it on manual focus because I have it focused in on where he is and where I anticipate. And if somebody comes across, it doesn't impact the focus to me.
No, that's a great point. If you're shooting
and
a player,
it depends on the sport, absolutely.
Yeah, if you're shooting a player who's going to be relatively in the same, let's say in the same focal plane.
Right.
So if you're lined up where you can have the goalie be relatively in the same focal plane and you got enough depth of field where if he moves a little bit, it's going to be okay, then you can go in manual focus and you don't have to worry about, like you said, players running in front of you and the camera grabbing focus somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's
happened a lot to me, especially on a penalty shot. I mean, he's going to be sitting in a certain area or even on a corner kick. He's going to be in that certain area. And there's a lot of movement in there.
Yeah.
And it's going to start hunting and pecking and not get what I want.
Yeah.
And I'll have my finger mashed out on it. Grab a focus, focus, focus.
Oh, no. I have plenty of photos where somebody has run right in front of the player, and now I've got that player. Right. You know, I mean, that's going to happen. The thing with sports, if you're out there shooting, you need to just bang out a lot of photos. You're going to get backs of people. You're going to get, you know, often in a shot with a sport, you often want the ball in the photo. Not always, but often you do. Otherwise, you know, it may not be as good of a shot. So you're going to have lots of them where the ball's not there, where it's coming in or going out or whatever, you miss it. So just take lots of shots. My next tip is to locate a few shooting locations. So you get there early, you find out, you know, where you're going to be shooting. If you're shooting basketball, and I guess volleyball too, I think she's talking about volleyball. I've never personally shot volleyball. But I know in basketball, and I believe in volleyball too, they change sides, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with basketball, that means if you're on one end of the court, they're coming to you or they're going away from you.
Right.
Yeah, they're either playing offense or defense, and the opposite on the other side. But then they're going to move. So you probably want to scout out a few locations. If you're in a gym, you may not have access to go everywhere. So where can you get to? You know, so that's one of the first things I do when I get there is, where do I want to set up camp to start? And where are my other places I can go to? Right.
Now, do you move often or do you stay on both sides to get the defense and the offense?
It depends. If I'm shooting one team, so I'm probably going to shoot. I'm probably going to mix it up, wanting to get both offense and defense.
Right.
And I want to get some under the basket, some off to the side, maybe some from the side. So I'm not moving everywhere, but I have a mm-hmm. few locations. Like in this shot here, at this point, I actually was laying on the pool deck, soaking wet, and I'm shooting them at the finish line, looking back up at the scoreboard.
Right.
So the clock. So I wanted to wait and wait for them to come to the end. Ain't that emotion? They just finished. They are exhausted from the swim, and I wanted to get them looking back up to see how they did. I don't normally shoot from there. I'll shoot from there sometimes during a swim meet, but I'm also a lot of times shooting from the other end of the pool where they're either diving off the board into the pool or swimming toward me, you know, stuff like that. Or from the side if they're doing a stroke that it looks good from the side. So camping in one spot unless you're forced to stay there. And generally with the younger people, you can move around a little bit. But you want to find a few locations you can shoot in. And I like to do that if I can before I get there. Once the action starts, you may reevaluate. You know, what is that rule? No plan has ever survived contact with the enemy or something like that. Yeah. I mean, when you have all these plans, once the action really starts, then, you know, things will change. So you kind of have to go with the flow.
I love this shot. Did the swimmer like this shot?
Yeah. I think she did. I know her mom did.
Yeah, I like that shot. That's, you're right. This emotion right there.
And this is an example of getting low. No, mm-hmm. I never saw any other photographer ever do this because of what's going to happen when you stand up.
You're going to miss all the swimmers in the back then.
Not that. You're wet.
Oh.
The pool is wet. The pool deck is wet.
Yeah.
And so I wore a dark shirt. I knew that I might do this. And blue jeans, so it wasn't quite as obvious. But, you know, I wanted to get a low shot where I was as close to their level as I can. Still, the pool deck is a little bit higher, so I mm-hmm. can't get all the way down. And I have to be careful that I'm not in the way of people.
But if you're standing up, this whole shot is completely different.
Yeah. No, I love the shot. Okay, so let's see. That's number six. Number seven. Anticipate the action. So this is also an example of me anticipating the action where I knew they'd be looking back up. So if you're shooting a sport, it helps if you shot it a lot. So you can kind of anticipate the action. You know, in basketball, you're getting the player coming up to, let's see, here we go. It is crooked. I have not adjusted this one at all. This is straight this is straight out of camera. So overlook the crookedness. But, you know, anticipate the action that's happening and when is going to be a good time to take that photo. I thought I had another one that was anticipate the action. I guess I don't. It takes some learning to know that, you know, learn the game, as Gary says. Yeah, you definitely want to learn the game, and you get better at it the more you shoot it. That also helps if you get there early. You can shoot the game before you, the one you're planning to shoot, and do that. Then another one, I love this one, capture the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a photo bomber in this one. I did not clone him out. He's there, but I could have cloned him out. But the emotion is with the kid closest to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he is just spent from the swim he just did. The photo bomber is the guy picking his nose in the back, which once I pointed out, you probably can't help but look at it.
Yeah, no, I don't even notice the kid up in the foreground now. Great, thanks.
And I probably should do something with that, but it is what it is in this case. But yes, the you know, there's in sports, there is tons of emotion going on, mm-hmm. and you can catch that. I love to pick out the kid or kids who have the most emotion. You know, I showed this one earlier. The most emotion on their faces, either from, you know, victory or defeat, and do that. I don't shoot any when they're injured. I don't shoot those, but you know, just in the normal course of play, you know, finding different players who are showing a lot of emotion, it makes it a lot more fun. All right, that's number eight. Number nine, get some candids. All the action isn't necessarily on the field. I'm going to scroll through some here. And yeah, this is back in my day when I decided to do the selective color. So don't hate me for that. But her eye is colored where the rest of it's not. But, you know, you get some action that is on the sidelines. It's not always there on the field. Mm-hmm. And in this case, because this was horribly lit night game for softball, I converted all these over to black and white. But yeah, there's lots of action that are going on the sidelines where you can get those and add to that.
Four pictures ago, they're wondering what was on the boy's wrist in the pool.
So if we go back to the boy's wrist in the pool, what that is, I can't show it when I point to it, but that is...
yeah, don't point
that,
to it.
If you look at that, it's not actually on his wrist. What is happening there?
Oh no, that's the
that's
other
the block
that's
where
the other platform. Yeah,
yeah, they hold on to that, and that's when they kick off in the backstroke.
The other one is just over his head, but this one's out of focus from.
Yeah, the one with the girl. I think the one with the girl was there too. It's just you probably didn't notice it. Where is that one with the girl? Right here. Yeah, because it's right in front of her.
Oh, it's right there, right in front
of her. Right in front of her, and then right on top of her head.
Right, but you don't see it because of the white background for the mat right in front of them.
Yeah, so yeah, it would have been a little better if that wasn't there.
The photographer just didn't position himself correctly.
that's true. I could have been in a better position. Maybe I should have got even lower. But get candidates. Get some things that are going on in the game. If it's younger kids, the parents have probably got tons of emotion going on there. So, yeah, there's lots of shots that are outside of that. And with some of those shots that are candid, you may be able to lower your shutter speed. You may not have to stay up that way. Roll to the left, Mike, he says. Yes. A little too late. I should have had you with me, AD. So there. And number 10, because I got to always have 10, goes to what AD said earlier, and that is shoot and raw. Always shooting raw, but especially if you're doing sports, you know, you have to bump up your ISO or you didn't get the white balance right. You want to shoot in raw. This does mean you need to have a big enough memory card or multiple memory cards because it is going to take up more. Except for the one case I run into where I couldn't shoot raw and the camera I had.
Okay.
And that is I went to shoot competition cheerleading. And of course I got there early.
Yes.
I got there early. Yeah, you remember that?
Yes.
I got there early to shoot the team before them or two or three teams before that. They're only on the competition floor for let's say 2 minutes, 3 minutes. It's very, very short. So I'm sitting there, I think I was with my D2X, which didn't have a huge buffer. I'm shooting in raw and literally like 10, 15 seconds into it, the camera stops taking photos because it's filled up the buffer. And I have to wait for it to clear out before I can start taking more photos. And by that time, the team was halfway done with their event. And I'm now shooting at a slower frame rate as it tries to keep up. So I learned that by hitting it early. I learned, you know, well, I can't shoot in raw for this because the burst I was doing is a little bit more than I was with a normal thing. Normally, I'm not just... Even though it's 9 frames per second with this D500, I'm not shooting at, you know, just continuous 9 frames a second. I'm doing 3, 4, 5, 6 bursts at a time, shot bursts at a time, and then letting up. And, you know, so, but if you have a low buffer and can't handle shooting raw, then you're going to have to go over to JPEG if you're shooting a sport that needs it. I try to stay in raw all the time. And with my D500, I think I can get 200 frames at 9 frames a second before it has
the
to pause. It actually is not full. What it is it causes a pause. So I can, if I let up and then hit it immediately, it'll do another 200.
Oh,
I think it's just to stop it from overheating or whatever. I don't know. but So I would say if you can shoot in RAW, bring enough memory cards that you can do that. A few tips I didn't give here are, you know, charge your batteries the night before. Make sure your memory card's in the camera. And if you need bring extras, bring those. I format the card in the camera.
Absolutely. There's no other way to do it.
Yep. I am charging a battery, my spare battery right now, because I'm going to shoot tomorrow night. Get all that stuff ready. What was the, I had another one. Crap, I just thought about another one that I was saying. What were we talking about? What other tips you got?
Shooting in the RAW.
Shooting in the RAW. Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Shooting through the action. So I don't think I have a good example of something that's shooting through the action.
That makes sense because you're not going to hit it at the exact moment. And I think the great example of that is people try to take a picture of somebody swinging the bat and the ball on the bat.
Yes.
And that is so difficult to do. Even if you're taking 10 shots a second, you can't get that picture. So yeah, you know when the person's about to the action's going to happen. Start shooting right before it and right through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely great.
Yeah, and a lot of these things, you know, you as soon as something happens, you're wanting to let off the shutter. Get a few frames after that. If you're watching it, as it starts to come into the frame, you know, shoot. Start shooting early. Stop shooting late. If you have enough memory cards, that shouldn't be a problem. I tend to like to be somewhat tight in my shooting if I can, you know, if I have the length with my lens to get tight. But, you know, you may switch between portrait and landscape mode in shooting sports. Depending on the sport, a lot of like basketball, I'm often shooting in portrait mode to get that. But if you want a wider field to see more of the action, you need to shoot in landscape. So mix it up. Right, Tim?
Absolutely.
All right. So hopefully that helps Kathy out there in the JPEG Raw Beginners group with some ideas.
I think those are great ideas.
I think that, you know, Kathy, what you got to do is just get out there and shoot. And, you know, if you just have the lens that came with the camera, if that's what you have, you know, look at maybe getting a 50mm 1.8. They're not that expensive. It's really... you know, it's got a 1.8, so it's going to be a little bit faster. May not, I don't know your lens, maybe it doesn't focus as fast, but it should be focused in fast enough. And if you have court side access, you know, 50mm may be enough, depending on where you're at and where the player is. If you're on one side and you're on the other side, maybe 50mm is not enough. But, you know, look at that. You know, the speed, you want as fast of a lens as you can get as far as the f-stop goes.
Meaning the lower the number.
Yeah, the lower the number, the better. At some point, you know, if you're able to go too low, you probably don't have that problem. But if you do, then you may not have enough depth of field. But, you know, if you're shooting a 50mm 1.8 like Gary has out there, he loves his 50mm 1.8. I've done that with some of the bigger kids that, you know, the depth of field gets more as the players get further away from you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I'm shooting really close to Tim, I may be able to get one eye in focus, one eye out. But, you know, if Tim moved back 20 feet, I'm going to get his whole body in focus.
Now, when you shoot, do you shoot with both eyes open?
Not always, but I try to. I try to look for the action, you know, coming.
Right. That's my point.
I try and do that. The other thing is I will sometimes move the focus point from left to right if I want to have the player in one third of the image coming, you know, like in the shot we had here, I had the focus point on the right third.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, though, if it's fast moving action, I'm probably going to put it in the center.
Right. No, that makes sense with this one because you knew that's where she was going to end. So, you're focusing off to the left of it. So you want to focus where she's going to be, not that it picks up the person with the red hat in the back.
Right. And this is a good example of anticipating the action. You know, you might look at this and go, wow, she was just staring at that.
That was just probably a brief second.
That was a brief second. It might have lasted 1-2 seconds at most. So I'm sitting there waiting. You know, when they come up, they often are like exhausted. They put their head down. They might look at the other players and they look up and they only look up for a little bit. If they have a really good score or broke a personal record, they may, you know, have more motion to it.
And, right. Their arm might go up in the air or something. Yes. Right.
Yeah. I have never been fortunate enough to have the close player do that. It's always been a player down the line with someone blocking him in the way. And in this case, I wasn't able to get behind the where the kids, if you look at that, where they're jumping off of, they, I wasn't allowed to get back behind there. I shoot with, I have glasses, so I shoot with my glasses on. Chan was asking. All right, so that's my sports tips.
Shoot tonight. With glasses or without glasses?
Glasses.
I had laser surgery, so I don't wear glasses. Yeah. And I have a dilopter in my camera anyway, so to adjust it.
Yeah.
And now, do you use, I guess you don't use yours then, so you're using your glasses.
So I have that adjustment too for my right. for my camera, but it needs to go two or three more clicks.
Oh, really?
It's not enough to compensate for my eyes.
Yeah. So you have to wear your glasses.
Yeah. I do have to wear my glasses, yeah. So, oh, well.
Every once in a while, like the dilopter gets moved, and I'm looking, I'm like, why are my pictures out of, oh, wait a second.
Well, I think that's gonna be it for this week. Let's go here. So if you want to subscribe to the show, head on over to jpedroaw.com/subscribe. And from there, you can see us on the audio format. We're on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Podbean. And video, we have video large and small on iTunes, YouTube, Vimeo, and Podbean. So go out there and subscribe through one of those two. Subscribe to us on Facebook, not Facebook, on YouTube, and get alerted when we go live. We also go live on Facebook. So if you haven't liked our Facebook page, do that, and you'll get notifications when we go live. And, you know, search for us on iTunes or wherever else you want to subscribe, and you'll probably be able to find us out there. If we're not where you want to find us, email me at podcast@jpedroaw, and I will see what I can do to get us there. Every month we do have a photo contest. Head over to jpedroaw, see if I can do it, jpedroaw.com/contest, and there's ways to enter right there. AD and I will be doing another photo review show this Sunday. Then we're going to take a couple weeks break, but we review those and give you tips on how a few tips on how you could have changed them and not necessarily made them better, but different. And AD is great at giving those critiques and tips. So come out Sunday nights at 8 o'clock on YouTube and Facebook, where we go live and talk about that. So until next week, I think we're back next week. Until next week, keep it raw. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.